You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, welcome to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. With me, as always, Logan, Elliot, and JC. Before we come on, we just wanted to very quickly, you know, there's nothing political, nothing particularly groundbreaking, but it felt wrong to start a show without sort of acknowledging the victims of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history of the Orlando, Florida nightclub, the gay nightclub. It's important to note, in Orlando, Florida, Pulse, so our hearts and our thoughts and prayers are with the victims. Not much else to say. I don't know if anybody wanted to add any thoughts.
I mean, there's nothing really to add. Like, you said it fine.
All right.
Huge tragedy.
Yeah. Huge, terrible, just miserable,
I mean,
story. And we're still kind of getting information. And it'll, you know, we'll be hearing it over the next few weeks, next few whatever. But huge bummer. And
well, the sad thing is it happens so often now, like Sandy Hook, everything. I mean, just. It happens on almost like a quarterly basis, so it's like we were talking about this before. You really can't even invest that much outrage because you're just sort of numb to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I guess that's as good a transition as any, because that noise you hear in the background is my dog, Penny the dog, knocking over the recording insulation. And I guess we'll just get started, see if we can lighten the mood a little bit. All right, welcome to Inside the Locker. This is going to be a show where we're going to stick to the facts. We're going to talk sports. We're going to talk about all the summer things you need to catch up on. And it's going to be, I think, lit as fuck is the best way to put it. All right.
Lit as fuck. Inside the Locker, so lit.
Inside the Locker, lit as fuck. First thing I want to talk about, the 2016 NBA Finals. As it stands right now, going into Thursday, so this is, you're listening to this Thursday morning, hopefully, or more than likely. What's more than likely is that this audio file was posted Thursday at 3:30 p.m., and you're listening to this Friday morning as you're looking at the Inside the Locker iTunes channel, and maybe it auto-played for you, maybe like one of the other, but we're, in any case, we're happy that you're listening. We're going to talk NBA Finals. By the time you're listening to this, they may already be over. This may be Friday. They may have ended Thursday night. Game 6, going back to Cleveland. Penny? My dog is eating the straps on a...
I was worried she had gotten like a candy bar or something.
Duffel bag. So let me I'm going to go take that away from her. Before I do that, JC, it's Game 6. Who's going to win Game 6? We'll get right to it.
I mean, I called Warriors in 6 at the beginning of the series. I still feel like they're the odds-on favorite to do that. The loss of Andrew Bogut is a big one, although he hasn't played huge minutes in this series.
Oh, no. Who will set moving screens?
Yeah. That is kind of the biggest loss for the Warriors, in that he sets a large number of moving screens, which is kind of the key to Klay and Steph being as open as they always are. But, yeah, even though I said it would end in 6, I think it's a closer matchup than people think. And The Cavaliers have shown throughout 2 finals now, not so much during the regular season, but they're able to, as effective as it can be, contain Steph Curry a little bit. And I think when you contain Steph Curry, it almost cuts the head off the snake a little bit. The thing is, the snake that actually has arms. Muhammad Ali had a great quote when he beat Sonny Liston, when he said he's gonna hit him from so many angles, he's going to think he's surrounded. And that's kind of how the Warriors approach you. When you keep Steph Curry in check, Game 1, Sean Livingston goes off. Game 2, Draymond went off.
Yeah.
Game 4, kind of everybody went off in the fourth quarter because the Cavs kind of collapsed.
Yeah.
So you never know where the hits are going to come from, but they're probably going to come, and it's a matter of keeping them at bay.
You know, it's interesting, though. Say LeBron pulls this off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's immediately an all-time player.
He's
already an all-time player, but if you beat a 73-win... Golden State Warriors team that, you know, people tried to make this about Steph and LeBron at the beginning of the series. I don't think there's any question who the better player is at this point. I just don't think there's any question.
LeBron. Like,
it's LeBron by a comfortable margin.
One thing I am most comfortable with, like when the series started and I felt like the Cavaliers were going to lose, and I was already dreading the way people tend to clown on LeBron because he'll then be 2-5 in the finals, and people will say his career is a joke, even though it's the furthest thing from the truth. I do feel like people have seen in this series
just how good
he loses, it's not all his fault.
And honestly, I don't put the Cavs losing on. You know, there's gonna be a huge rush to say it's Kevin Love's fault.
Right.
I feel like what we found in the last few years is it's not Kevin Love's fault. His game just does not work within that system.
Yeah.
Because you can't. I think what we figured out, you know, if you're watching the Miami Heat and what happened to Bosch when he was there, there's just not enough oxygen in the room to have three big stars on a team that all get equal. Like somebody's gonna take back seat.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I really sort of feel for Kevin Love because he's getting like really maligned, and it's like, man, this is not his game. Like you can't just say, hey, be Kevin Love for like 5 seconds of a game and then, you know, be a backup player the other, you know.
Well, he's not the best fit into the Cavs.
Exactly.
And he's being used away from the basket. He and LeBron tend to overlap duties. I think the blame that you put on LeBron is the fact that he picked these ingredients and he's not delivering a championship team.
Yeah. But even then, a lot of people wouldn't blame LeBron for choosing the idea of Kevin Love, who was 26-12 for his career, over the untested Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done it. I didn't like them as much as I like Kevin Love. I'd watched Andrew Wiggins in college. I thought he was a can't miss.
Those are my shoes.
Whereas, you know, there's never a guarantee with a guy like Andrew Wiggins, but I was pretty sure he was not going to be a bust.
Yeah.
And I would have made that move, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's an understandable move, yeah. So the problem, again, is, like, you know, there's different options. You know, Bill Simmons made the point, I think, on Twitter that, you know, he sees LeBron's career ultimately ending in a position where he gathers his old crew and hangs and, you know, gets Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony on one team, and when they're all, like, 34, they go out riding together. I can see that ending.
That'd be sort of cool.
These are the years these are the years in Cleveland.
Yeah,
Elliot, why don't you take the sock away from the dog?
The way that Kevin Love doesn't fit, it does make me think that I was wrong in my initial assessment of if Carmelo ever got to play with LeBron, I would have thought that was a huge misfit. But the way Kevin Love isn't working, and the things that they try to do with him, the way that they try to make him play, I feel like Carmelo actually would fit into that pretty well.
I think he'd be fine, yeah.
Yeah.
The
Olympics. And Elliot just got Draymond Green by...
How did your dog turn into Draymond Green?
Penny the dog.
Yeah.
Like, ow, that really hurt. The Olympics, I think, proved
fucking hell, man.
When Carmelo Anthony doesn't have to be the first or even second option,
yeah.
When you just give him that oxygen, man, he loves it.
Yeah. But one thing that is interesting about this finals is...
Go ahead. Now, before we get into the one interesting thing about this finals and then continue our final discussion, I just want to say that, so we can set the scene, this is a small conference room with insulated walls, and there's not a lot of room to breathe. And usually we do this podcast late at night, and the dog just sleeps in the corner. Tonight, she's a little excited. She's urinating as we speak.
Oh, God.
Maybe not. Maybe not. No, because she's sitting in it, so she did not pee. She went into pee formation, and she's just kind of smiley and loopy. Penny, you're being
a real Draymond.
Absurd dog. You're being a real Draymond Green. All right, I'm sorry.
As frustrating as she is, she's still adorable.
Yeah. Oh. If you guys only knew. In fact, I'm going to take a picture of this dog, and maybe we can tweet it from the inside of the locker handle so that you can see just how pretty, just how precious this dog is. Look at how precious Penny. Look at how precious Penny. All right, Penny. All right. So, let's get back to it. What's the one interesting thing?
Sports.
Sports.
So a lot of people thought as the Warriors were ascending that they were going to be the one exception to the rule that a team as popular as they are, a team as good as they are, is exempt from the inevitable hate that happened to the likes of like the Patriots earlier this century. But I think this finals and really kind of throughout this whole season – And I talked about this a little bit on my basketball podcast, is I felt like it was inevitable. I think these guys are cocky on a really obnoxious level. A level that I personally don't have a huge problem with, but I can see how people hate it.
Well, Maurice Spites yeah. is talking shit.
Yeah.
There's a lot to
Your
dislike.
Your bumbling ass needs to sit the fuck down.
Yeah. And a guy like Draymond is a guy, I really liked him a lot last year, but this year, with it's as evident as dirty a defender as he is, like that's similar to like Bruce Bowen. I don't like guys like that, and I'm pretty much done with Draymond. I still kind of ride with Curry and Clay, but yeah, I'm done with like Draymond.
I've been saying this. You listen to our podcast. I've been saying this forever, but there's a lot to dislike about the Warriors. Let's go through five things real quick. Number one, ownership.
Just a bunch of tech guys.
Right.
Think they reinvented
ownership
shit.
/ bandwagon fans yes. / just tech bros. Yeah. No joke, you guys. I went to a wedding in Oregon, so I flew to Sacramento. Penny, you can't eat that.
That should be the name of this podcast, like this for this title. Penny, you can't eat that.
I went to a wedding, so I flew to Sacramento, drove to Oregon, went back to Sacramento, took a 20-minute flight to San Francisco. And there were all these like, rich people that flew in just for the Warriors game and were just flying back after Game 5 on the plane in first class, and they just looked like such cliches, right? The rich guy with the salt and pepper hair that has like wears a sports coat over a T-shirt, you know.
And probably some like 20-year-old next to him.
I don't want to put him on blast, but I don't think that was his wife.
Yeah. Are you babysitting right now?
So... Yeah, you think about the bandwagon effect. You think about the fact that the team itself, Steph and Clay, are just kids that grew up millionaires.
They were millionaires growing up?
Yeah, because
they're both the sons of NBA players.
I knew there was a reason I didn't like those fuckers. Yeah, just looking at them, I'm like, I always thought to myself, y'all don't look hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all look like y'all expect this shit. Because when Steph misses a shot, he just looks like, man, why did I make that?
There's also
fucking old that.
There's also the fact that that's just a very likable, clean cut team that like little kids like, and so then you're like, well, fuck these kids, fuck you, you don't know, and that's where the like Steph is the best player comes from, is because you have all these like 14-year-olds on Twitter. They're like, Steph is the best of all time, and it's like you're 14.
I'm pretty sure that fuck the kids is gonna be the name of the podcast.
Fuck the kids, and then also it's the identity factor. It's the fact that LeBron James made a lot of enemies when it came to traditional, often white sports fans.
Now you got two light skinned.
They don't like. And then you got these two light-skinned, affable guys. So it makes people, myself included, just be like, God, man, look at these like little light-skinned, you know, idle kids. I fuck with LeBron. But, again, the mistake and the real criticism of LeBron James is the fact that, again, he picked out this team. And there are people on this team who aren't good. There's people like Mozgov on this team who LeBron was excited to play with because he had size. Who is just about useless. There's people like J.R. Smith who's streaky and irresponsible. People like Amon Shumpert that they traded for.
Well, Dele, they need to get rid of.
I think Dele was drafted. It's just not really
So it's just there are players on this team. And LeBron thought he could come in here and big brother a team full of great players and just kind of like be the big brother on a team. He doesn't need to be the alpha dog. But he needed to be the big brother on this team. And now someone made this great joke on Twitter who said something like LeBron James, after the game, he was sitting in the press conference row next to J.R. Smith and Kyrie Irving, and he looked like he was up there like, Your Honor, these are good kids. They're getting their GEDs. So it's like it's tough because he doesn't have – like you know, 5 minutes into game one, I tweeted – Oh, that's right. J.R. Smith's never going to win a title. Like the other problem the Cleveland had is that the desperate game three that the weaker road team tends to win in the finals. Even like the '99 Knicks, won game three. Even like the 2003 Nets won game three.
That's right.
Even the like, I don't know.
Did Utah Jazz examples. Ever win? Like they won a few against the Bulls.
Yeah, the Jazz won.
They went to six games.
That desperate game also turned out to be the J.R. Smith goes apeshit game.
Yeah.
You can't have them be the same game. You needed J.R. Smith goes apeshit to happen like game five or game six so that you'd have. But you already got your 40-pointer out of LeBron. So I don't know how Cleveland wins another game.
And your 40-pointer out of Kyrie.
Yeah. You already used your cards. You know, it's like if you're playing Millionaire and you got like your phone a friend and you're at pull the audience kind of thing. Like they already used their JR card. They already used their Kyrie goes off card. Their LeBron carries the team for night card. Their game three desperate card. They needed all four of those things to be different games.
Now, I'm not trying to
win
be,
the series.
I'm not trying to be funny.
They already used them.
What if Kevin Love goes off? I'm not trying to be funny. Like what if
he could?
He's still good.
Well, they have players that play that can get to 20 you need Kevin Love.
I'm saying, what if he goes for 40? Just goes out of his mind.
He won't go for 40.
I think the real question is Steph Curry going to finish this the way it looked like it would end at the beginning of the season in January, certainly, mm-hmm. and the way that he helped end the Thunder series, which is Curry just going to show up? He hasn't had one good game.
Nope.
And
that's kind of where my worry lies. In
Well, what you're waiting for the Curry game.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. If you know, I don't know who's going to win Game Six. I honestly don't, because if Game Six was at Golden State, I think Golden State wraps it up. Mm-hmm. But I think LeBron's back against the wall. He's in Cleveland.
Yep.
It happened to him last year. I think he might pull it out. But what I'm not concerned about this game so much, because this game isn't that exciting to me from a person who's rooting for the Cavs.
Sure. And by the way, let's just a quick informal poll so people know where we stand. Yeah. Forget about who you think is going to win. Who are you rooting for? Logan, who are you rooting for in this series?
As someone who's not really an NBA fan, probably the... So I used to live in Oakland.
That's right.
And whenever I was out there, I hated the Warriors. Although I really do like Steph Curry. So I'm kind of rooting for them, but begrudgingly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel good about it, though.
That's totally understandable. JC, who are you rooting for?
Cleveland. LeBron's still my favorite player.
I, too, am rooting for Cleveland.
Cleveland.
So, all right. So we're all rooting for Cleveland. Now, that's it. We're all... We're all rooting for Cleveland.
As the whitest dude in the group, then I...
This is a very diverse podcast.
But think about how, you know, because yes, sure, Logan's the white guy in the group, but he's also like an incredibly progressive and smart person. Logan is the...
And he's also from Oakland, so...
The opposite of racist is Logan. And even Logan is like, yeah, I kind of like the Warriors better. I kind of don't know.
I'm also the third Choctaw, so...
Yeah. There you go. So, in any case...
Wait. Okay. Go ahead. It's like if the Cavs can win Game Six, I think they have an overwhelming favorite in Game Seven.
Well, except that historically, it's just about impossible to win a Game Seven on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah,
just doesn't happen. And that's kind of, I mean, I think that's where we're gonna end up. I think the Cavs. I'd be very surprised if LeBron, as hot as the Cavaliers are playing and looking right now, let his team lose at home Game Six. I'd be very surprised if LeBron didn't have the big shots in him, didn't have the help that he needed. He just needs 20 points from Kyrie. That's so doable. That's all you need. LeBron and the Cavs can win Game 6. And then Game 7, you're right, it's going to be really close. But the way these Game 7s always work, always, always, always work, is the desperate road team starts hot. They're ahead in the first half. Think of the 2010 NBA Finals.
Think of the LA versus, this wasn't the Finals, but LA versus Blazers.
LA versus Blazers.
That big comeback.
When the Miami Heat beat San Antonio with LeBron, that was a tense Game 7 up mm-hmm. until 6 minutes left, and then LeBron took over because yeah. Miami was at home.
And home cooking, home crowd, it's just so hard to win that. So I don't expect – I think the Warriors still have an overwhelming chance. But
I mean, I think they're the better team.
I think this is the deepest team in NBA history mm-hmm. and has so many guys that can just blow up and so many – I've never seen it. There's never been a team – forget about depth, because that you can argue – You look at the 2004 Lakers that had Gary Payton coming off the bench, Karl Malone coming off the bench.
Robert Horry.
Not the 04 Lakers. But there's a lot of great deep teams, but there's never been a team with this many shooters. Maybe the 05 Suns, but they didn't have the size, the enforcer to really carry them. When has there ever been a team with this many great shooters?
But see, that's part of the reason I don't like the Warriors, because I feel like they're destroying the game. Like, and I know they say, oh, the game has to evolve, but man, the game is more than just shooters.
Well, it's sort of a symptom of the rule change, the handshake rules, the way the game has gotten to this point in history.
I think they should come back.
This was going to happen eventually, where you get a team full of shooters.
Yeah,
you know, that become very difficult to play against, very difficult, like almost overwhelming. And this will be a really interesting testament to how we remember. I think this is LeBron going to do something amazing?
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right.
Or is this going to be a coronation? And I tend to think I just don't see how the Warriors win two more games in a row.
You're right, though.
Or lose two more games in a row, excuse me.
I never thought about it. Like, this is LeBron's chance. Mm-hmm. He's going to be remembered as one of the best players, period.
But as he should be.
But if he wants to be considered a legend and seeing something amazing, this can be his flu game sort of thing.
Yeah.
If he comes back from this against this foe, this could be the thing that 20 years from now Nike makes commercials about.
Absolutely. And especially when you get to a point where you look at the LeBron highlight reel and you think 2013 NBA Finals, 2016 NBA Finals. That's when you go, oh my God, look at this guy's career.
One more burning question about the finals.
Last one.
What do you think of Steph Curry's shoes?
Ugh,
those white ones.
You mean the old man Obama shoes?
Yeah. Have you seen those?
Yeah. I don't think they're... That's the other thing, though, that people want to talk about is think of how, like, shoe culture and the way that people of color get really excited about it, especially in the American cities. No one is out here rocking the Curries.
Yeah.
I've never seen them out in the wild. I maybe if you saw like a 16-year-old suburban kid on a hoverboard,
yeah,
he'll be rocking the Curries. But I've never seen anybody rock the Curries in the real world.
See, I'd much rather get those new Kyrie Irving ones that are really nice. They look sort of rainbow almost.
I haven't even seen those.
Those things are nice.
I can't talk shoes. I'm not a kicks guy. I think people who are sneakerheads and really like to line up for Jordans or whatever, that's cool. It's just not my thing. That's just not my bag. I have disgusted in case with.
I agree, but there's a difference between shoes not being your bag and designing shoes that look like sidekicks from Father of the Bride. Like they look like sidekicks, and I'm like, did you just watch Father of the Bride and say, yeah, those are my shoes? That's what I want.
I love them. All right, so that's our NBA Finals talk. That's our basketball discussion. It's the summer. The big sports cliche is that it's boring in the summer, and for a lot of people that's true and that's understandable. For me, I'm a soccer head, so that's always my thing. But
plus we're gonna a few weeks Olympics.
Yeah. Olympics.
I love the Olympics.
And yeah, LFO said that summer was good.
LFO, man, rest in peace, Rich from LFO. That dude left behind a mark on the world.
Which is also because there's not as much going on. That's why we aren't releasing as frequently as we used to.
Right.
We're not going to get around and be like, so guys, what do we talk about?
Well, there's big ass summer movies. Which, by the way, I'm asking this for the first time. I'm not like,
yeah.
Have you been keeping track of our fantasy team? For those that don't know, we have a box office fantasy team where we did a draft. We each drafted five movies. Whoever has the most, the highest combined opening weekend gross total wins the pool. How are we doing?
I haven't updated it yet.
Been on blast.
No, it's easy for me to update. Whoever had. Ended up with the first pick and has Civil War is probably going to end up winning the whole thing.
You think so?
Yeah, the box office, the movie industry as a whole this summer, the box office is down 22% from last year.
Sounds about right. It's been a mediocre summer.
I think the bigger opening besides Civil War, I think something opened up at $65 million, but I don't remember.
I thought that was X-Men that opened it.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's crazy. Summer's been crazy.
Independence Day, that looks fucking good.
Sequels have been disappointing this summer. Like,
yeah, Independence Day looks like the stupidest thing.
Yeah,
but it was stupid. Like, that's what I'm hoping for. I want Randy Quaid to show up out of nowhere and be like, "I'm back. Gotcha. I thought you died."
Will Smith is like one of the aliens secretly. No,
it would be so good.
It looks so absurd. And you got that like young, good-looking Hemsworth brother that's like, fuck this kid. I don't need to see this guy. Just threw him in there.
I'll have it updated for the next episode.
So, because it's summer, we're going to talk about things that like we enjoy. Summer recommendations, things to watch this summer. We're going to start with JC.
I mean, not as light as the tone of the song, but recently ESPN released the OJ documentary, Made in America, and I've only seen the first two parts. Everything I heard about it going in is that it's fantastic. It's one of the best things you'll see this year, and it really is. So far, the first two parts, it delves way beyond the case itself. It delves way beyond the man himself. It looks at really everything that was going on in the country as a whole, specifically Los Angeles, and it even goes back as far as the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Like, one of the most amazing parts of part one was at the height of the civil rights movement, when you have Martin Luther King doing his thing, you have Muhammad Ali and Jim Brown and other famous athletes stepping up, being Marcus Allen being the face of that movement. Martin Luther King approaches O.J. Simpson himself, since he's the most popular college athlete at the time, asks him to join them, be a part of this movement. OJ is like, no, I don't want a part of that. I don't want to be a part of that. He doesn't didn't consider himself a part of that world, as he put it.
The reverse aerial.
Yeah, and there's even another moment where two guys walk into a club, they see OJ at a table, and one person says to the other, look, OJ's at that table full of N-words. The other guy tells OJ about it, and OJ goes, doesn't that piss you off? And OJ goes, no, that's great, don't you see? They don't see me as one of them. They see me as OJ.
And that's what a sellout is.
And it's, yeah, like, the man was approached by Dr. King himself. Said no to his face.
That's really hardcore.
It's heavy. So watch out, man. You got to stay woke up there. Yeah. So yeah, so that the OJ, so, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like, I saw the ads for that, and I was like, man, it's a five-part series?
Okay.
I need to watch five things on OJ Simpson? I just saw the People versus OJ on Fox, but you're saying it's good.
It's real good. It delves beyond that. I don't remember as much about the Rodney King beating at the time, but I just watched part two today, and I feel way more informed about that event now than I did at the time. And I, you know, not being a black person, not having experienced this kind of racism myself, but I would go so far as to say, like, with the climate today, especially the way we view police and police brutality, I feel like if in that instance, if those policemen would have been convicted at the time, like, we'd be in a different world today. Like, it wouldn't have cured racism, it wouldn't have cured police brutality, but I feel like we'd be in a much different place.
There's also an argument to be said about backlash from the other side of that, too.
I mean, I'll just speak for me. It's like, I fully think that if they had convicted those officers, the climate would have been different. It'd have been harder to get a not guilty. But if I'm living in a community that if you feel like almost, I mean, I guess rightfully that you're under assault and you're being told that, and if you got, I mean, the thing, and I hope they cover it, but I think the thing that sometimes people lose sight of is just how great those lawyers were on that team. Just to put it in context, so you got 5-on-5. It was Michael Jordan. It was LeBron James. It was Magic Johnson, Wilt Chamberlain, and Shaq against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Yeah. They'll get to that in the later parts because I've heard snippets where the district attorney at the time had no idea about the arthritis medication that OJ was taking, and that when he stopped taking it, the side effect was that it made his hands bigger.
Yep.
And so OJ's lawyers told him to stop taking that medication in preparation of being asked to put on the gloves.
Genius.
So the glove didn't fit. It's like, yeah, because your hands...
And yeah, all these years, the district attorney didn't know that until a few months ago.
Shit, I knew that like a few years ago.
Yeah. You're a lawyer, too.
I didn't know that, but
yeah. Yeah, but I didn't work on the case.
And one of the lighter notes about this whole thing is it's being aired on ESPN, and so ESPN personalities are talking about this documentary, and it led to... maybe the dumbest thing I've ever heard Stephen A. Smith say in his life.
What did he say?
Oh, God.
He said some absurd things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a high standard.
He said, now keep in mind, there are some ESPN personalities who on their way to becoming journalists went to law school, have some training in the law. Stephen A. Smith does not. He said if he had been the prosecutor, keep in mind, at the time, he was the beat reporter for the Philadelphia 76ers. If he had been the prosecutor with all that evidence they had against OJ, he would have been able to beat Johnny Cochran and get a conviction.
No. Yes. Like,
probably not the case.
Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah.
Obama probably couldn't have gotten a conviction. Like, just giants. Yeah. And, like, Cochran sort of – one of the things they teach you is it's not important, honestly, what the answers to a question are. Mm-hmm. The answers to the questions really don't matter. What's important is setting the question in the first place. So what Cochran did through the entire thing is he didn't make it as – it was never about is OJ guilty. It was is the LAPD fucked up?
Yeah.
That was the entire question of the trial. So it's like if you watch any kind of politics, like look at what Hillary's doing right now in the election. She's not casting it as should I be president. She's casting it as – I mean brilliantly. Does Donald Trump scare the shit out of you? Yeah. If yes, vote for me.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like they never caught up to, it's like they were, this is a cliche, but they were playing checkers and the other side was playing like three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, we're going to let you, like, it's one of the things you have to think about a lot. It's like, I'm going to let you beat me here because I need you to think you're winning because I'm really playing this other game.
Yeah.
And it's just, anybody who says, oh, I could have won, man, Stephen needs to shut his mouth. Because he doesn't know what he's talking about. But then again, that's never stopped him before.
I wish you would follow Skip Bayless to Fox Sports 1, where nobody will hear a word Skip Bayless says
ever
again.
Isn't, like, Jason Whitlock there, too?
Jason Whitlock's a
him and Colin Cowherd have a show that nobody watches.
Oh, God. It's like,
it debuted this week. I think Jason Whitlock is maybe... Because he's
a hack.
It gets into just some really just terrible institutional things that I'm just like, I can't believe you're saying this.
He's just as bad as Stephen A. Smith.
What are you saying? I mean, Stephen A. Smith is... I think Stephen A. Smith's a little bit of an idiot. I really do. I if you're hearing the Stephen A. Smith, or if it gets back to me or whatever, like, I do think you are a little bit of an idiot. I don't think you're very smart.
This is
smart.
A considered comment.
I think you're just kind of like, you have an inflamed ego, and you're just kind of like, don't have, it's not fair to say stupid, but I should say it's someone that doesn't have very good perspective, I think. Yeah. I think that's what really hurts him. Jason Whitlock believes some things that people in the 1950s believed, and I think that's grosser. When he talked, like, he criticized, no joke, the movie Creed.
Yeah.
He criticized Apollo Creed's estranged wife for raising a baby that wasn't his own. Like, he shamed her for doing that. And he said something like, and no joke, because I was listening to it at the time, and I was like, oh, this will be all over Deadspin. He was like, real women don't raise babies that aren't their own.
Wow.
And real women he also did the, like, real women don't cheapen the, he kept calling them cookies, but you know what that means.
Yeah.
Real women don't, like, cheapen the cookies by, like, so it was a really,
he's the,
like,
last motherfucker to talk about cookies.
I think the dude's yeah that's the dude that needs to lay off the Oreos, right? I don't know how we got into this. I don't know how we got into talking shit about Whitlock and Stephen Smith. Oh, because of the OJ thing. All right, so.
Well, did,
go ahead.
Talk about hot takes. There was an announcer who was on a podcast in Florida I think it's Barstool Podcast.
Oh, man, I don't even want to talk about this.
I want to talk about it because it's. We don't have to. It's fine.
No, we can talk about this.
Just real briefly.
Just the TLDR is that there was a Barstool Sports live stream, and a Fox Sports announcer said, I didn't even realize Mexicans were that smart. She said that in reference to.
And she said it so naturally.
Yeah.
Just like, I didn't even realize Mexicans were that smart. It's like, and then she tries to walk it back by going, no, you know, the Chinese one is always the smartest one in the class. And right. Then she starts saying anti-Semitic shit too. And it's like, you know.
It's terrible. But here's what's bad about it. Now, she's had her, she said something that you can't say if you're going to represent a major network. So no big deal. She said something ignorant. She got suspended from Fox. Boom. End of story. We don't have to see her again on a Fox telecast. I'm not worried about it. What did bother me is that the Barstool Sports guys are still completely unscathed. Mm-hmm. And when you get into sports blog culture, it can be really ugly, really sexist, really dumb. You have people like, I'm not going to say Clay Travis. What's the guy's name from Fox Sports? I don't want to say any names because I'm gonna forget. But basically, you had a Fox Sports columnist who wrote a really ugly, hateful thing about Caitlyn Jenner. That was just like the whole argument where she's not a hero. How could she have gotten the ESPN Hero Award? Which is like a really hate-filled argument because it presupposes that award matters, and it
it's a paperweight.
But he didn't have to deal with any kind of backlash for that, and unfortunately, that's just symptomatic of guy sports culture and sports blog culture. By the way, I'm sitting here googling blackheads. Like, I Google image search blackheads, like the little shits.
Why
on
would
your,
you do that?
Because I always wondered what that was, and I never knew what a blackhead was. And it's crazy. It's like these little fucking things on your nose.
Yeah,
I had no idea, man. This is disgusting. I can't stop looking at pictures of blackheads right now. It's really. I like what the fuck, man.
Well, do you want me to close your laptop for you?
You might have to, dude.
Well, just to, but she didn't just get suspended. She got fired.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good. That's her fault. That's her own fault. You can't, like, that gives me, again, that gives me some peace because, you know, you can do a lot of things and represent a major company, but, like, at this point, you can't be a racist and also, like, talk about the sports. Like, that's not okay.
You can be. You just can't, you have to be closeted.
You got to keep that to yourself.
Yeah, you dog whistle. You can't just be like, because, like, what's even worse is, like, the guys brought up the student from Crockett High School. Mm-hmm. That's how I came up.
Yep.
Who said valedictorian, nice legs, and an undocumented immigrant. And they were just like, she's stupid. She shouldn't have put that. Do I think it would have been better if she didn't say it for her? Probably. But my attitude is the Kanye attitude. hey, if they hate, let them hate and watch that money pile up.
Right.
It's like, they're going to hate you regardless. You might as well be proud of yourself as you do it.
Yeah.
So, but like, they were like, oh, she's stupid for saying that. And that's why she said, I didn't even know Mexicans were that smart.
Right.
And it's like, wow, go fuck yourself.
No, it was a really ugly story. All right.
So that's what I'm watching this summer.
Elliot, what are you watching this summer? What are you watching this summer?
I just finished I have a few things. I just finished watching all of House of Lies. Okay. On Showtime, Don Cheadle, Kristen Bell.
Okay.
John, I don't watch that.
So good. It's such a nice change of pace. It's a breath of fresh air because it's only a half an hour. You don't have to take that much time out of your day to watch it.
I didn't know that. And it was an hour show.
No, yeah, only half an hour. And it's like, you know how Zach Morris and Saved by the Bell used to stop time? They use that trope for Don Cheadle to stop time. So he's sort of running the show. And as somebody who loves Don Cheadle, I didn't know how much I loved his acting until I saw this. So that's really good. And then
is it a storytelling trope, or like that's what they can do in the show? In
a storytelling trope. Okay. So not that he can really do that.
Okay.
Like they play with it a little bit. So like say something's about to crash into him, he will reposition it to crash into somebody else. And then it will start back up. So it's sort of funny, but there's nothing that really relies on the plot.
That's weird.
And his life is all fucked up, and he's a consultant. And I actually know some consultants. And they said, yeah, that show is exaggerating a little bit, but yeah, some of that's pretty accurate.
You mean they don't really stop time and move things in minutes?
No, but like there is like a whole, apparently there's a whole bunch of sex, just a whole bunch of like, just whatever you can think of happening on the road. Once you get that deal done, it's just like, well, you're on the road now. I just started watching a show last night called Humans on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That's about synthetic beings, and it's really creepy, but in a good way.
Beings on Amazon?
Yeah, it's called Humans.
Okay.
And it stars Gemma Chan. It's a BBC show where you can buy an android that will serve you, and it's exploring some well-worn ground, but really taking a deep dive to say, you know, well, if you hire something to do this and you don't pay it, and it exists only to serve you, do you have a slave or do you have an appliance?
You have a is it a person?
Yeah. And so it just made me think, like, I guess I know, you know, when you get older, you start realizing that it's not that you get more conservative. The world around you gets more changes and you don't. So I've realized that I could see in the next 20 years, we start having like personal assistants. And if say 50 years from now, like, I'm 82 at that point. And say, like, oh, they're like, granddad, you should get a personal assistant. I'm going to be like, go fuck yourself.
Hey, why don't you fuck yourself?
You're so old-fashioned. Go fuck yourself. I don't want no fucking slave. They're not. I don't care. They look like a person. I'm not paying them. Fuck off. And so I can already see me being like that.
Yep. No, man. I think that's tricky. Well, you know, I think there was an article. I mean, chances are you, the listener, in your lifetime will fuck a robot. That's probably going to happen. Like,
that's horrifying.
And
who says you haven't already?
Yeah, you might have already
fucked a robot. I can assure you I will never fuck a robot. I'll tell you that right now.
I'll bet you $20
you probably fuck a robot. I'll bet you $10,000 hey, I'll never fuck a robot.
This is a family show.
But I wouldn't put it past myself.
But what if it's really hot?
What if it's a very attractive robot? And that's when
I still have to look at myself in the mirror.
Well, see, I think what's tricky is like if you're, you know, because I think What's really terrifying is some people have really dark fantasies and they need to check themselves. Yeah, and some people like fantasize about horrible, violating things, and that's when it's problematic because then it's like, oh man, are we going to give this crazy fuck a robot? Like, so it's tricky.
Is it going to mimic being distressed?
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know, man. Please finish your thought.
it's like, please bail me out. I mean, other than that, I'm doing what I always do. I just watch a bunch of anime. I'm playing a bunch of a game called Overwatch right now.
Overwatch too.
Hey, let's do a quick Overwatch review. So that's, here's what I can tell you based on what I know. It's a new first person shooter, and it's kind of designed to be an esport. So for those who don't know, an esport is the world of competitive video games, and it's an esport. So, all right, how is it? Give me the 1 minute elevator pitch.
It has a really good art design, so it's basically cartoony, but it's very well balanced. So there's about 20 different characters, but they're all balanced against each other. So there's no such thing as I'm going to play this one character and break the entire game. Like World of Warcraft, one of the downsides of that game was if you play it as a class called a shaman, you were going to pretty much win against anybody.
Yeah.
This is extremely well balanced so that it comes down to the skill you have and how well you know a map. So it really is a fair game. And it's easy to pick up, but it's hard to master. And that's always what you want.
But also, I think one of the things that sets it apart is that in a lot of other shooters, in particular, the emphasis is on how many people did you kill? How many people did you kill versus your kill-to-death ratio.
And that makes you not want to play if it's not good that day.
Yeah, and so you may suck. Like me personally, I'm not – like I'm a 37-year-old man. It's difficult for me to try to get all that stuff working.
I didn't know you were 37. You look young, man.
I know. I got baby face.
Like 20, I feel like we've covered this before.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. You look like 27, dude.
But anyway, so like there are a lot of other metrics that services. So it encourages people to play support roles.
Yeah.
To play defense, to help your teammate, to be a team player. And those things really matter. And that makes it much more approachable to someone like me who's not just about, I'm going to kill as many fucking people as I can.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But they service all different play types. So if you want to be, like, there's a character called Reaper who looks like what a 17-year-old would think was a badass character from the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, he wears all black, he talks like this.
Yeah.
And then there's a character, Mercy, she's basically an angel and all she does is heal. But I've seen multiple times the healers get the vote for the best player of that match.
Yeah, so
because they help the team the most.
Yeah, they do a little highlight thing of play of the game, and it's basically for everyone after the game is over, they do a little replay and say, this was the moment of the changing moment of the game. Some of them are kind of lame, but for the most part, like they I think they do a good job of, for the most part, of kind of highlighting support roles in that too.
Well, yeah, like one of the best ones I saw was this one team had been completely wiped out except for their Mercy, their healer, and her ultimate is she can resurrect her players.
Okay.
She goes like, heroes never die and they all come back. So she resurrected her other five players and they just cleared house. And that was such a turning point because that team thought, man, we killed all of them, we're good, and then they just res all the players with full health. And it's like, well, shit, fuck me.
That's awesome.
And so it's just, it leads to moments like that. So it's sort of cool.
Yeah.
I love it. All right.
Have we gotten to everybody yet?
It's my turn.
Okay, yeah.
It's my turn.
Okay. We don't want no devils in the house.
You literally just listened to The Life of Pablo. I was telling everybody to listen to it back in February. All right.
I wasn't buying Tidal, thank you. I was going to fucking wait till it got on Spotify.
You can pirate it. It's pretty easy. All right. Dude, look at my finger. Look at this shit. Before we came on, I sliced open my finger like an idiot, reaching into the kitchen drawer for a kitchen knife and grabbing the wrong end.
Yeah.
I feel like such a jackass. That shit happens. You want to check it out?
No.
all right. So here's what you should really be watching. Cover of Sports Illustrated a couple weeks ago had this great term that I'm going to use now. Guess what, guys? It's the summer of soccer.
Hmm.
Because you have three fantastic, unique competitions. I'm going to go through what you need to be watching. I said this a couple weeks ago, but again, the Olympics kick off in August. The Olympics feature great soccer. They feature Brazil, which has never won an Olympics.
Brazil!
And is gonna and they've won like literally everything else, so they're going to go all in on that, and it's going to be great. Now, that's not until August.
Mm-hmm.
Going on right now in June, twofold. Number one, the Copa America Centenario. It's a 100-year anniversary tournament, special edition tournament happening one time and one time only here in the United States, and we're down to the quarterfinals. It features the North and South American countries. I'm going to go through the quarterfinals real quick because you got to watch this. Argentina's playing Venezuela. Argentina. This tournament features five of the top 10 ranked teams in the world. Argentina ranked number one in the world, playing Venezuela, a team that's ranked. This is the lowest ranked team remaining, the underdog of the tournament. It's kind of a miracle that they got out of the group. And they're playing fucking Argentina. This is a chance to see the world's best player. This is a chance to see the most impressive collection of talent that you'll see on an international side in the world. It's the best. Mexico and Chile, the 2015 defending champion Chile, who won the Copa America that usually happens every 4 years except for this 100-year anniversary tournament, playing against Mexico, the home team of the tournament. They filled out football stadiums all across the country. It's going to be a ball. You also have Peru and Colombia. Peru is a team that is just kind of happy to be here, miraculously knocked out Brazil. They're playing Colombia. Colombia is a team that has an astonishing amount of talent. It feels like they've been underperforming for about the past 5 years. Colombia is a good dark horse to win it all. And then the other quarterfinal, USA-Ecuador. This is going to be such a fun game. It's going to be in Seattle, so we're going to have a giant rocking home crowd for the boys. The United States is
fans are we going to have?
A lot of potential instant fans, because I'll tell you what's going to happen. Ecuador is one of those fringe sleeper teams that's kind of on the rise. They have some players that are in form, some players that, you know, they play in the Premier League. Valencia plays for Manchester United. There's another Valencia named Ener Valencia.
They're very tasty.
Who just Ecuador is a team full of talent, and it's clicking, and it's in a good spot. So look out. But home soil, Seattle fans, USA is looking pretty decent. Assuming the United States can beat Ecuador on Friday, you're going to get a USA-Argentina semifinal. That thing is going to sell out. It's going to happen in Reliance Stadium in Houston, Texas. We're driving. It's going to be next week if it happens. Knock on wood. I really want to see the U.S. play Argentina. We probably won't beat Argentina, but it's a great test, and it's a great it's just a great stage. It's our boys against the best player in the world. Who doesn't want to host? I mean, think about college football. Who doesn't want to host the number one team in the country at home? It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
So,
question. And apologies if I missed you saying, because I heard you mention the Olympics. How much does the world of soccer, with all the given tournaments, how much does the world of soccer care about the Olympics?
Olympics have traditionally been a tournament for, because it's kind of like an under-23 tournament.
Yeah, okay.
So traditionally it was like it's a youth tournament.
This is the way USA basketball used to treat it.
Right.
Okay.
But lately, it's become a little bit of a pissing contest. And so there's a new rule that, sure, it's a U23 tournament, but you can take three players of age to the tournament.
Okay.
And so you're seeing, so like Brazil's taking its people like Neymar to the tournament.
See, that sounds really dirty.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You can take three players of age to the, it's like,
I mean, the thing is, like, international soccer is so popular. Like, there's people right now trying to make international soccer leagues so that every summer the countries play each other. But that would cheapen the World Cup.
Yeah.
And the World Cup and FIFA don't allow it. I mean, that's the thing is, like, the Olympics happen independently of FIFA, so it becomes kind of tricky. But they matter more and more lately. Now, what is a FIFA-sanctioned competition? So anyway, sorry, Copa America. It's a really fun tournament. It's a special one-time-only tournament. It's happening in the States. It's on Fox Sports 1. It's a channel that you probably have. They're doing a great job of covering it.
You've never watched it before.
Fox Sports One. You know, it's interesting, but I think you're looking at potentially USA Argentina in one semifinal, and more than likely Mexico Colombia in the other. My prediction at the beginning of the tournament, and I still think this is the case, I have Argentina beating Mexico in the final. The last time that Argentina, for all the talent, this is kind of a LeBron thing with Messi. He's won everything there is to win at the club level with Barcelona, but he hasn't won dick with Argentina. So everyone has given him the, yeah, but you're the best player in the world. You might be the best player of all time. Yeah, but you haven't won anything. And Argentina ranked number one. They've been number one for a while. It's time to win something. The last time Argentina won a tournament was 1993. They beat Mexico for the Copa America final, which was the South American title. So I can see Argentina. And by the way, you know, as a Mexican, as a Mexico fan, Argentina has terrorized me my whole life. Argentina knocked the Mexicans out of the 2006 World Cup. They knocked the Mexicans out of the 2010 World Cup both times in the Sweet 16.
So
my life has been terrorized by Argentina. But I just think everything that Mexico can do well, and it's a lot. Mexico, by the way, now 22-game unbeaten streak. That's the longest in the world. So they're hot.
Well, it sounds like Messi needs to watch the Glenn Ross speech. It's like, you got to close. I don't care about your intentions. You're a family man. Go fuck yourself. Hang out with your family. Bring the damn thing home.
So is Argentina going to get it done? They certainly look like they want it. Like, you know, part of the reason Brazil's not in here right now is that for all the talent that Brazil has, they just didn't seem super locked in. Argentina's locked in. Argentina Mexico could be an epic final, but what matters most and what I really want to see is Argentina USA next week. That's going to be so much fun. All right, the other thing that you got to watch, and if you're a sports fan, if you have ESPN, you know about it, it's the Euros, man. Every 4 years, the European countries get together and play a tournament. This is probably the best Euros ever, and I'm going to say that because for the first time, you know, that'll tell you how deep Europe is. Europe is a really hard group to qualify out of. Every World Cup, there's like some great teams. England, the Netherlands, Portugal, Italy. Every World Cup, there's a great team that doesn't make the World Cup because you can't qualify through Europe. It's the SEC of international soccer.
Okay, I'm with you now.
And this year, they expanded the field to 24 teams. So 24 European countries are playing each other. Six teams of four. That whittles down after group play to a Sweet 16,
I didn't know there were that many European countries.
And there's a lot. And guess what? The Netherlands did not qualify for the Euros.
Huh.
Again, soccer power of the Netherlands. They were in the 2010 final, 2014 World Cup semifinalist. Couldn't even get into the Euros. And what makes the Euros fun is that unlike the World Cup, where history dominates, it's very hard historically to overcome the crushing weight of defeat and make history. That's why it took Spain 100 years to win a World Cup, it feels like. In the Euros, they're wide open. They're passion-driven. They're intense. Today, you saw Slovakia defeat Russia. We've seen some great games. You saw Albania take everything it had, play to the end against a really, really talented French team. By the way, the tournament is being hosted in France, so there's a lot of political stuff. You know, we're coming off of the Paris shooting. It's going to be such an intense, fun tournament, and it's just starting. We're in week two of three, and again, this is the round robin stage, then the Sweet 16. But some games you guys have to watch this weekend. I mean, there's just no excuse. Germany, Poland. I don't know if when you think of Germany, Poland, you probably think of World War II, and I can guarantee you that the Germans and the Polish think of World War II. That is an intense game, two sides that don't like each other, and it's going to be fantastic. England against Wales is so intense that France has restricted the sale of alcohol leading up to England against Wales. Italy and Sweden on Friday. Are you fucking kidding me? Italy and Sweden's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the third best player in the world, just signed with Manchester United, playing against the Italians, the team that is coming into this tournament without a surefire superstar, a bunch of old-ass players no one likes, but somehow they're topping the group with 3 points.
You talking about Miami Heat?
Belgium and Ireland. Belgium, probably the most talented squad of talent in the world. Every leading club in the world has some Belgian dudes. Belgium is just loaded, but they're young. They seem to not care when they put on the national team uniform. They're getting booed at home. Playing against Ireland, the exact opposite. There are no good Irish players anywhere in the world, and yet somehow this team is united, unified, and people are just all in on it. So it's just so much fun, such a great tournament. And the best part about it all is none of us are European, so there's no real emotional commitment where you're really hurting if somebody loses. And again, every year somebody makes a run. So it's a lot of fun. You should watch it. I think that's our show.
Logan,
what are you watching doing this summer, man? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right. I'm just working.
Somebody got married and all that shit. Can't watch no TV.
No, actually, I was going to second on Overwatch. It's been really good.
What's your player?
I've been really playing support a lot. I've been playing Lucio.
Lucio's so good.
Yeah, he's a healer class, and he's rad. But I also like
Tracer.
Winston.
I don't know how to play Winston.
He's this big ape dude who jumps in and rips the place apart.
Goes ape shit as it were.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good game. It's a good fun game. It's
also relaxing.
It's also still new, so there's not like everyone is just dominating everything on it too.
That's awesome. One of the cool things is that if they catch you cheating one time, they ban you for life.
Yeah.
And they don't just ban your account. They don't just ban your IP. They have figured out some kind of way to ban you across everything.
They ban your mother and your sister. Yeah.
They're going to bury all of you.
Yeah, no, I usually spend the summer working on my lawn and doing video game stuff just because it was a little slower. But also, I'm watching a bit of Formula One racing still.
Talked
about last time. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
It's fine. Which also, kind of part of the reason why I like Formula One is like I don't necessarily have a driver that I'm rooting for. I'm just kind of watching the drama unfold, the stories, and seeing what's happening there.
That's so often the most fun part of watching sports is just kind of enjoying the ride. And also, I mean, you know, on Tuesday, Hungary won a game. Hungary just, like, never gets to the Euros until they expanded the field to 24 teams. Like, the people in Hungary, I don't know anything about Hungary. Watching people in Hungary just lose their minds over one goal is pretty special. It's pretty cool, and I really enjoyed it. The player that scored did, like, a little Lambo leap where he went into the crowd and got beer poured on him, but it was, like, really cool. So I love that. And, again, it's just a neat display of humanity.
So to go back to the Euros real quick, who's your pick? Who are maybe the who's your pick to win it all, and who's your pick to who you're following, who you wanna see?
Well, for both of those, I think it has to be France. I think France is one of those teams that the history of France in soccer is really interesting because they were a middling to good team for most of the 20th century. In the 90s, they finally sort of. They let in their immigrant population. You know, France has a big constituency of African people, and especially when it comes to former French colonies. So they sort of embraced that cluster of immigrants, and they won the 1998 World Cup. And since then, France has been kind of a leader in having a multi-ethnic World Cup. Now, I've talked to I have a friend from the Ivory Coast, and I was like, so the Ivory Coast used to be a French colony. Do you root for France? You know, you speak French. And he's like, no, I don't root for France. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Because
there we go.
Because I'll tell you why. Because, yeah, sure, the French team is like, you know, diverse and has a lot of black people on it. Has, you know, the best French player of all time, Zinedine Zidane, is Algerian. Or has an Algerian heritage. And yeah, they embrace us when we win, but when we lose, they treat us like shit.
Yep.
So if you're like, you know, like you get even more shit if you're black in France and the black team loses from the streets, like day-to-day life, you feel like you get more shit, he was saying. So that's why he didn't root for France. Independently of that, I really like the team. This team is just loaded. The most exciting player in the tournament is named Paul Pogba. He's the prospect, right? He's the guy. He's a free agent this summer. He decided not to sign with a team until after the Euros because he knows that he's going to be on a world stage. He has the potential to do crazy things. And the big story in Europe all summer, all July, is going to be, where's this dude going to sign? You know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United. Like, who's going to pony up the money to sign Paul Pogba? You got guys like Antoine Griezmann from Atletico Madrid, who's just like a lethal striker. People like Andres Signac, who is like 31, which is a little old, but he's like a trusted hand, and he left Europe to play in Mexico this past year. So he's like, there's just a lot of good people like Hugo Lloris, who's one of the best keepers in the world. Like, the French team is young and good, and the tournament's in France. So I think France is the favorite by a slight hair, except that here's the problem. France can't beat Germany. In World War II, and since then, they have not been able to beat Germany. Germany is the defending World Cup champ. Germany's the big dog. I think France is your winner unless they run into Germany, and then no way in hell. So that's what I'm seeing. But there's just a lot of teams that are always good. You know, Spain, Italy, England is just loaded with a new wave of talent. So
the English new wave.
The English new wave. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun tournament, especially because you're going to get to the Sweet 16, and then you're going to get to the quarters. And the quarters will be about five established giants and like three teams where you're like, what the hell? Wales is here? Albania's here? Northern Ireland's here? How did they make it? So it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, folks, that's Inside the Locker. That's our show. Have a great night, an even better Saturday, and kind of an okay, relaxing Sunday, and a tolerable Monday. And we'll talk to you soon.
Go Cubs.